So far, so good. We're live, fellas. Dude, this is going to be an awesome chapter. You're going to love it. I guarantee you they'll love it. We're doing fogging and negative inquiries. What are we on now? Chapter 6? Don't forget, smash the like button. Hit subscribe. Hit that notification icon. You're going to get more of these. Because I'm not going to lie, I keep coming fast and furious. And I notice a lot of you guys are missing out. Maybe you don't have the time for it. That's fine. Have it on your evening commute. I like this one. Anyways, let's cut to it. Slow things down. Chill them out just a touch. How's it going, everybody? Nice. 11 guys managed to catch me right at the start. 9 likes. You guys are awesome. French Spice has the right point. Smash the like button. Okay. Part 6. Assertively coping with a great manipulator. Criticism. There are 2 major results when we systematically assert ourselves using the verbal skills I call fogging, negative assertion, and negative inquiry. First and most important, for the therapeutic goal of becoming whole, fully effective human beings, the practice of these skills can minimize our typical negative emotional response of anxiety to criticism, whether it's real, self-imagined, self-directed, or from somebody else. This internal change in our emotional reaction and attitude occurs with repeated practice of these skills. This is a clinically observed fact and not a theoretical assumption. I put a pause in this one because a lot of guys don't understand. Like, you want to go back to the pickup guys where they talk about canned routines. It's kind of corny. Yeah, of course it's corny. And for a lot of the strategies we tell brand new guys who are in relationships and red pilling themselves, or just single guys working on shedding their unattractive behaviors. You're like, what do you mean? If I have approach anxiety, I walk up to 50 people and ask them the time that's supposed to help. It's like, yeah, practicing this stuff desensitizes you to your own stupid emotions about it. And then you'll have less stupid emotions about it. Again, as he says here, observed fact and not a theoretical assumption. I guarantee if you have approach anxiety, approaching 1,000 people will kill any anxiety you have in your head. And the same thing goes for all this stuff. We already talked before about shedding your nice guy behaviors, the breaking free exercises in the previous series. Again, it's all in the sidebar playlist that I have on there. Feel free to check it out when you got time. Hours and hours of straight up good content, by the way. Same thing with this. Practicing fogging, especially in situations where the stakes aren't too high, allow you to instinctively do it when the time comes. So where do we leave off? So second, the practiced use of fogging, negative assertion, and negative inquiry cuts our learned emotional puppet strings. These, which makes us automatically react, perhaps even panic to criticism from other people. The learned anxiety triggered by criticism, which allows us to be manipulated and defending what we want to do instead of actually doing it. Great example for this that you can think of. If you end up in an argument with a woman, and I don't know why you would, but whatever. The first thing a guy will do, or the first thing a guy will hear, is a girl telling him that he's an incel, or that nobody will love him, or that there's something deficient about his ability to attract women. They use this because it works. Because so many guys are completely insecure and they have a scarcity mindset. They're like, I don't know if I can attract women. I'm not very confident in my abilities. So when they're called out on it, the guy automatically starts defending himself. And that's the worst thing you can do. Because all you're doing is allowing yourself to be manipulated. Now, from a relationship standpoint, insert nagging here. If you can't think of an example from your relationship, and I don't care if you're the alphaist alpha that ever alphaed on Alpha Continent in Alpha Nation, guaranteed your girl's testing you on this stuff. If you're saying otherwise, then you're probably trying to sell me something. That's all I'm saying. So I observed, almost without exception, the person being criticized becomes defensive and denies the criticism. This manipulative criticism occurs in the first place because the nagging wife, for example, has been taught that her wants have to be justified. Again, girls act as crappy as you let them. Here's a good meeting somebody in the middle. Girls aren't these supernatural Machiavellian master manipulators that do whatever they want with impunity. A lot of this stuff that you're getting, a lot of this nagging, a lot of this shaming, all this stuff is basically based on a girl's own insecurities. So while you're shedding these insecurities and you're making this non-assertive behavior into assertive behavior, realize it's not because you're extremely deficient in assertiveness and everybody else is super assertive and you're playing catch up. In this case, it's a bunch of kids bobbleheading around who don't know their head from their ass. And you, in this point, are just making the effort to fix yourself. It's one of those things to think about. Not everybody is red pill. Not everybody is super far along. And a lot of this strategy is learning not to join the crabs in the bucket of negative emotions and sadness and whatever nonsense you want to attach to it. So in the situation of non-assertive criticism, some other coping styles beside defensiveness or denial, real or imaginary, or suggested error is required the relationship to be less destructive to both partners. A kind of behavior that would effectively, assertively, and non-manipulatively cope with the criticism would contain the following elements. Now, I'm going to get to those in a second, but I want to deal with, like, this stuff is amazing. If you guys check it out, there's a great book by Vox Day. It's called Social Justice Warriors Always Lie. This stuff is more than just about sleeping with your wife or smashing a random thought. This has cancel culture repercussions to it. Consider, is it Tim Hunt? Yeah, Tim Hunt. That scientist a couple years back was like, girls don't belong in the laboratory because they fall in love with their instructor and they're too emotional. It was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek joke. The mob went after him. And that's the thing. Insulting him, shaming him, you're a misogynist, you're this, you're that, you're the other thing. This, on a macro level, is exactly what a nagging wife or a chick that thinks you're not man enough at the bar to sleep with her is doing. They're attacking you, they're giving you these insults, and they're not true. So what are these guys doing? Well, they're defending themselves. Well, I'm not a misogynist. I'm actually the most woke man that ever met. And they make all these platitudes and they basically sit here begging for forgiveness. Now, here's the problem. By supplicating to the cancel culture mob, you're giving them all the power in the situation. Like I've talked about it before. You picture these closed interactions on a scale or on a chart. You have a status. Am I higher status or lower status? Or harmony? Are we on the same team or is it adversarial? You think in that position, if somebody's throwing out these insults, calling you a misogynist for saying an errant thing on Twitter 6 years ago, yeah, they're not on your team. And they think they're better. Well, technically, they think they're worse than you. And that's why they're doing the attacks. And so what you're getting in return is indignation. Now, if a guy sees this, he's thinking, oh, well, we're on the same team. We're all good people. Nobody here's bad, evil misogynists. But he doesn't think of himself as better or worse. It's kind of neutral. And that's where this justification comes in, or deering, or replying to these elements of criticism with, like he says, what are the coping styles? Defensiveness. No, you're totally wrong. Anyways, the other person takes that as supplicative, and that emboldens them to think, well, actually, I'm higher status because I made this powerful guy just start kissing my ass. And all you've done is validate the criticism towards you. So like I said, when I'm talking about this stuff, it's more than just about smashing the wife on the weekends. This has real ramifications. And this, if you want to have the courage to survive in social media or just the world at large without having to be constantly in fear of, you know, divorce, rape, or cancel culture or any of that nonsense, these are the tools you're going to use. And these are the tools you're going to need. Of course, at the same time, you're going to be confident enough that you're not arguing with plebs on the internet. So that's going to probably protect you as well. Again, come here for the sex, you leave with self-actualization. You're welcome, fellas. But anyway, so the things, the other coping behaviors. They would train you to distinguish between truths that other people tell you about your behavior or the arbitrary right and wrong that people may tack onto the truths about your right and behavior. Maybe your girl's like, you play video games all day. Well, that's just a statement that she doesn't like it when you play video games all day. But there's also that inference where you get playing video games all day is wrong because you should be out working or rubbing my feet. And that's the thing. There's these two subtleties to it. And when you start getting defensive, you're addressing those inferred rightness or wrongness about it, those categorical imperatives. I remember talking about that one before. If you don't remember, it's a hypothetical imperative is something that you must do or treat moral if you want a certain result. Well, if you want to be more productive in a day, then stop playing video games all day. That's an obvious one. But playing video games all day is inherently a bad thing and it makes you a bad person. That's a categorical imperative. Now, those are generally manipulative. So when you get these attacks giving you an accusation, well, when you infer the moral right and wrong from it as a categorical expense, then you start seeing how manipulative this stuff can be. Connect the dots. You'll see how it works. And you're going to understand why mental point of origin, being your own judge, is not only important, I would argue it's vital from a survival standpoint, especially in the modern economy here. So the coping behavior would train you to feel comfortable when you are told the truth about your behavior in a critical fashion, and the other person does not openly spell out the right and wrong involved in your behavior, but only implies it through his or her critical tone that your behavior is wrong. And that's like that seedy, snake-like part of it. They don't actually take the assertive stance of saying that you're a bad person because of this stuff. They infer it. They insinuate it so that if you call them on it, I didn't say you were a bad person. I just said you shouldn't have been playing video games all day. Do you see how weaselly that is? Again, very subtle power games, and most guys have too much tism to actually pick up on it. But you're here now, you're going to get it. Trust me, you're smart and switched on that way. Additionally, that coping behavior would train you to feel comfortable when a truth about your behavior is openly interpreted as wrongdoing within the other person's arbitrary structuring of his or own life, or her own life. Again, sometimes people actually do flat out say you're bad for doing this. But the whole point of these things, you are your own judge. You've made your decision. You understand the consequences. You have your hypothetical imperatives. I know what I want. I know this gets me there. Back to the video games all day one. Look, I just got back from a deployment. If I want to play Call of Duty Modern Warfare all day, I'm going to do that and you're going to be okay with it. But that's your decision. And that's just it. So you're comfortable when somebody calls you a bag of hammers or completely lazy because of this. You're like, you weren't there when I had to haul garbage 12 hours a day. So, you know, get bent. So 4 is kind of a repeat of things. So the last one. So the coping behavior would train you to feel comfortable about your errors. And while errors and mistakes are inefficient, wasteful, usually but not always unproductive, stupid, and maybe in need of revision, nevertheless, in reality, they have nothing to do with right or wrong. So there's always the position. Manipulation isn't always about lies and subterfuge. Sometimes she's calling you lazy and you actually are lazy. Let's go back to that playing video games all day. Let's say she had to go to the hospital to get some surgery and your job was to watch the kids. You were playing video games all day, so the kids are sticking forks in electric sockets. Yeah, if she calls it wrong behavior, hypothetically imperative-wise, she's right. But here's the thing. Even if she is right, you're still not getting manipulated. Yeah, fair enough. That's a screw up on my part. You don't apologize, but you fog it, and then you make the corrections you need to make. Again, you are the judge of your own behavior. And even if you did screw up, even if you flat out know in your heart of hearts that critique you're getting is right, yeah, you got a point there, and you move on from it. And that's where negative inquiries and negative assertions for the most part are going to be really good on this. But first, we're going to talk fogging. On that note, don't forget, hit the like button, smash the like button, subscribe. You guys know the deal at this point. The support really matters. And honestly, we get those likes up. It helps us engage and we reach a lot more guys with this stuff. I'm doing my best. I'm not swearing and breaking the language filter. You guys do your best. Get that high engagement numbers up and we can save the West. Anyways, a quick break here for Chris Johnson's $2 super chat. Is Bill Burr a beta? Purple pill, if anything. You know what? We're going to deal with that one at the end. It's a good question, and I'll get to that, and there's a pretty good thought on it. But right now, we're going to focus on this, because somebody's going to be watching this 6 months from now. No idea what we're talking about. We want to keep to the content. So in teaching people to cope with criticism, I instruct them not to deny any criticism, not to get defensive, and not attack with criticism of their own. And that's fogging. He's used other labels with it, agreeing with truth, agreeing in principle, agreeing with the odds, but fogging is the one that resonated the most. They use some examples about mothers being adversarial and manipulative with daughters. Again, this is actually a good book. If you're with your wife and your mom or her mom runs roughshod over her, this stuff might be good for her too. Give it to her for a read or maybe just show her examples. Could be worthwhile. So again, what is fogging? You basically, somebody is emoting to you. They're using their manipulation to attack you, to criticize you. And all you have to do is agree with the emotion, but don't validate the criticism. The easy example here. The mom says, Sally, do you know how important looking good is to a young girl who wants to meet a nice man and get married? You can tell these are like 1950s examples or 1970s examples, but they're cute enough. If you keep staying out so late all of the time, you don't get enough sleep, you're not going to look good. You don't want that to happen, do you? And then, you know, the response, yeah, you're right, Mom. What you said, it makes perfect sense. So when I feel the need, I'll get in early enough. But that's just it. Okay, yeah, you're right. If I stay out late at night, it's probably going to give me bags under my eyes, or, but yeah, I'll make the effort. I'll make the effort when I think it's important. Got it. So you're not saying her critique is right. She's not saying you're a bad person. She's not inferring you're a bad person. She gave a critique. If you stay up late at night, don't get any sleep, you're going to start showing signs of age. Yeah, I probably will. Probably something I should do something about someday. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. That's just it. It's fogging. The reason they call it fogging is because you're not attacking, you're not defending, you're not excusing, you're not explaining, you're not rationalizing. There's nothing for them to grab onto. There's no ability to escalate this into a full-blown argument. Again, an argument takes two people. It's like a fog. You can throw a rock in it, you call the fog names. The fog doesn't respond. Nothing affects it. And it's being aloof. So as he expands on it here, you can see in this training dialogue, the practice of fogging does several things. First, it forces the listener to listen to exactly what the critic says. For example, if the critic says, you sound like, and the learner replies, you're right, I do sound like, you know, a jerk, a misogynist. You sound like a misogynist. Yeah, I probably do sound like a misogynist. End of story. If he says, I think that you hate women, and you reply, yeah, I can see why you'd think I look like I hate women. Or you can understand why you would think that. The novice learns to respond to only what the critic actually says and not what is implied or what the novice think the criticism implies. It teaches the novice to be a good listener, and it's active listening, to listen to what is actually said, not to read minds by the critic, and instead of interpreting what is to conform to the novice's own self-doubts and insecurities. This is why projection is perception. You would be amazed if you're sitting there and some chode on the internet is insulting you with something, the first thing they insult you with, if your need is to defend it, then you're obviously letting know that's a sore spot. But instead, what you understand with fogging is the person insulting you insults you with things that would be an insecurity towards them. Well, this hurts me. It must hurt them. It's a very low IQ move, but when you insult people, you don't know enough about them, especially if they're somebody you just met. Internet fights, great example of this. So they're going to hit you where it hurts them because that's all they know. They know themselves. They don't know you. So right there, we talked before about conversation techniques. That's free information right there. If a girl says, you know, little dick and you're never going to get a woman, you're going to be alone and die alone. Right there, it tells you a huge insecurity on their part. It also lets you know, don't take it personally. They're just mad and you've said something that got past their comfort zone. Yeah, I guess you're right. If I go this route, I'm probably going to end up alone and dead somewhere. See what I mean? That's like agree and amplify kind of fogging, but you can play around with it. The less, just get rid of the amplifying and then you're basically got fogging. Here's the thing too. You're also a good listener, but you're a good listener to the surface level conversation and you're completely ignoring the subtext. I've talked before about, understand womanese, but speak in Manglish. This is what I'm talking about. Let's say the girl is saying this stuff in an accusatory tone, and she's inferring that you're a bad person from this. That's the subtext. Girls all understand that. You're acting right now like a big gronk. I don't understand any of that subtext. I'm not acknowledging that subtext. My frame does not acknowledge that subtext. So you're just dealing with the surface stuff. You're just an evil misogynist. Well, I wouldn't say I'm evil. See, that's fogging. But you're not implying you're a bad person. You're not implying you should feel bad. You're not thirsting over a girl because you think that girls should think you're not a bad person. So you're completely ignoring any of her subtext and you're not getting pulled into her frame. And that's a perfect example of getting pulled into somebody's frame. Are you making inferences based on the stuff they're trying to get you to infer or the stuff that you're insecurely allowing yourself to be inferred by? That's either not having a frame or getting pulled into somebody else's frame. By just ignoring the topic and fogging, you skirt the entire issue. It's a wonderful assertive technique. At the same time, at least one sensitive student is going to ask, though, how can I agree with somebody who tells me something that is not true? I'm not going to lie to myself. Again, and he ties into, like, is this an insecurity on your part? Is it just them making guesswork? Is it them physically lying or trying to gaslight you? A lot of chicks love talking about how gaslighting is bad for you, but they never talk about what to do about it. And in this case, fogging. Perfect. I like I normally don't like the specific examples in here, but they're so old. But I just love this one because it deals with IQ, and I love the Stefan Molly heads when they're talking about their crap. Do you know your IQ and specific numbers? And yeah, of course. Is it normal? Is it above 100? Yeah. Well, then how do you fog and say your IQ is so far below normal that half a moron could replace you? And then me, it's just simple. I'd say, I'm not surprised you feel that way. Sometimes my brain works so poorly that I wonder if the IQ guy didn't make a mistake. See that? Like, it doesn't bother you. You're actually agreeing with the guy because you find it so absurd and funny that he's making up these random stories about you to feel better about himself that you're playing along with it. It's like a story. Again, tying this back to pickup. A lot of guys are worried, like, oh, I don't want to lie to get women. I just want to be myself. I'm like, dude, girls aren't stupid. They know you're lying. When you talk about, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, I'm an accountant. That was my always, I always made up a job. I was a sailor at the time, but I'm like, I'm an accountant. They're looking at me. I don't look like an accountant. I don't act like an accountant. They ask me accounting questions near tax season. I'm like, I don't like talking about work. It is very clear I'm not an accountant. Same as that golf pro is not a golf pro. The alpha male is not an alpha male. Like, none of this stuff is real. It's all a joke, but it's so obvious and absurd. It's a game. It's like wrestling. Is wrestling real? Is wrestling fake? Who cares? You're entertained and you want Hulk Hogan to beat the Ultimate Warrior, or you want the Ultimate Warrior to beat the Macho Man. See what I'm saying here? It's all theater and it doesn't matter. So if it doesn't matter, somebody can make up this stuff about you and it doesn't faze you. You can just fog it. Yeah. I could see why you'd think I'm low IQ. I haven't responded with 20,000 words. Fair point. Another occasional comment I get after I demonstrate fogging by having them criticize my teaching style is, but were you sincere in agreeing with my criticism of fogging? And he answers this question with two hopefully thought-provoking questions, and I'll pass this on to you guys. Well, aren't you supposed to be sincere in this? Like, you're just lying to the person or totally dismissing them? So his question is, how sincere is a probability? Or does it really matter? Again, you're such a low IQ chode. Yeah, I can see why you'd think that. Yeah, I probably am. How sincere do you have to be in a probability? And if he thinks you're low IQ, does it really matter? Mull those ones over. So somebody who is neither sincere nor insincere wasn't capable of being moved by logic. And that's the thing. If somebody makes this argument, girls love logic because they know guys like a just world. They like everything to make the sense. They like all the pieces to fit in. So when they manipulate you with this logical rhetoric, they're hoping that if they can make things not make sense and then offer you a way to do what they want in order for the world to make sense, you'll do it. But you're not being sincere. You're not being insincere. You're just fogging them. So you don't really care about their logic because I'm still not going to do it. Well, I took out the dishes five. If you're not doing the dishes, I'm doing half the work. You need to do half the work. The universe is fair then. Yeah, I can see the universe being fair that way. Luckily, it's constantly expanding, isn't it? Or like, yeah, don't even have to go in that second part. Just agree. Sure. Probably not fair when you do it that way, now that you mention it. And I'll probably do an episode on chore play later because there's a lot to unpack from it. But so your response to these, I call it frame shifting manipulation, is, hey, I'm not manipulatable. I don't fit into your game plan. If you don't like that, fine. Find somebody you're more comfortable with. Again, work as a contractor, work as like a lawyer, work in all these positions where people have to deal with you, and imagine how useful this is. Hey, I paid you. My tax dollars pay your salary. Yeah, I can see how you feel that way, but if you're really raw about this, go find somebody else and just fire the client. It is amazing how when you aren't manipulated like this, your workload gets better, you pick on better clients, you filter for people who are worth your time. Again, this is more than just about getting laid. This is about being a fully functioning, self-actualized human being, a man. A real man would fog. A real man uses negative assertions. You get what I'm saying? Look at you guys busy in the chat again. Another shout out, smash the like button, hit subscribe. Getting to negative assertion. So negative assertion and negative inquiry, they kind of muddle together here. I would strongly suggest you be reading this chapter on your own. So I'm going to kind of blur the lines on this one. Just go with it. So if you're non-assertive in coping with your mistakes, you could be manipulated by other non-assertive people through your feelings of guilt and anxiety into seeking forgiveness for making the error and somehow making up for it, or denying the error through defensiveness and counter-criticism, which provides your hostile critic with a verbal punching bag to aggressively work out his own feelings of frustration. In either case, you cope poorly and feel worse. So we talked before about your Bill of Assertive Rights. Remember that one? You're allowed to make mistakes and you're allowed to just not care. So this is how you're applying those. If somebody gives you a legit criticism, which is true, and it definitely hits you, and even if it hits you in insecurity, well, that is still manipulation because they're trying to make themselves the authority in your life, the one that you're seeking forgiveness from. Again, remember, harmony. Are we on the same team or are we against each other? Who's higher status? Who's lower status? Keep this in the back of your mind. If somebody's trying to flex on you, if they're trying to manipulate to get a higher status in this interaction, just don't play the game. A lot of times when people hear this about how power games are structured, they think, well, how do I win? Do I do this move and it's 4D chess? It's like, no. Sometimes you just flip the board and say, I'd rather play Monopoly. Screw it. And this is how negative inquiry works. Or is it negative inquiry, negative assertion? Negative assertion works. My mistake. So how then do you cope assertively with your errors? In the simplest manner, you verbally cope with your errors as if they're exactly that. No more and no less. They're just errors. My God, I left the thing on the counter. Oh, we forgot to go out. Oh, you're such an idiot. You always do that. You never do anything right. Yeah, I screwed that one up, didn't I? If you want to watch, actually here. After watching this, if you want a good example of that, go watch that episode of The Simpsons with Grimes. Do you guys remember that one where Homer was like the perfect guy and Grimes had to fight for everything? He was always beaten down. Watch when Grimes is trying to manipulate Homer. You went into space? You're an idiot though. Yeah, they're letting anybody up there. Yeah, that's me with President Ford. Your son has a factory? Yeah, can you believe that? Homer is using a perfect example of negative assertions. And it's just wonderful. You may think of it as playing dumb, by the way. And it sort of is playing dumb, but at the same time, you're not playing dumb as a cudgel. You're just agreeing. Oh, you screwed that up, didn't you? Pretty much did. And that's as far as it has to go. What are they going to do with that? You're such an idiot. Yeah, kind of am. Oh, I can't believe you're the worst guy on earth. I don't know about the worst. Definitely up there. Anyways, we're past it now. Whatever. I've already forgotten about it. Maybe you should just leave it. Maybe you should just leave it now. But that's just the point. Like you're establishing you're not taking the bait. So although may it seem paradoxical at first glance, those of us who cannot cope assertively with criticism also seem incapable of coping with compliments. So we're going to do this. A lot of people can't take compliments. And when somebody says a general nice thing about you, if your first instinct is to argue with them about it, realize it's the same concept. In this case, instead of negative inquiry, positive inquiry. Man, you're looking really swole today. And you're like, oh, I haven't had a chance to work because the COVID and that. No, instead it's just, yeah, thanks. I thought so too. That's just it. You're taking the compliment and you're letting it lie. The other person felt nice by saying a nice thing to you. So you're reciprocating by acknowledging they said a nice thing and just agreeing with it. You're validating their assertion without ceding any ground. You're not supplicating yourself. You're not making yourself seem lower. You're not self-deprecating. Thanks. I think this looks nice on me too. I love your shirt. Yeah, looks good. Thanks. And that's just it. So the negative assertions, negative inquiries. The negative inquiry is just kind of, instead of saying it as a statement, you just say it as a question. Oh, you're such an idiot. Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, why would you say that? Like, what would you say that about? If you want to take out the passive aggressiveness, and it's like those when you see a Karen and some guy's just saying something. Well, why would you say that? What were you thinking? Why would you say that? And the girl doesn't care why you're saying that. They're saying is, I want you to back off. I want you to tell me you're sorry and I want you to get my forgiveness. But that's like that's a manipulative version of negative inquiry. So instead of that, think of, why would you say that? I don't know. Why would I say that? Again, it's a negative inquiry. Puts it back on him. Well, if you think I'm a jerk, I want you to tell me why. At least give me something to supplicate for if you're gonna make me bow and get forgiveness from you, Karen. You know what I mean? The whole thing's kind of ridiculous. So, getting back to that, three tools. Negative inquiry, negative assertion, fogging. These are probably some of the strongest assertion tools. Now, that's the end of the chapter, but I'm going to quickly go off on a small tangent here because alpha males need to hear this. There is something about guys who consider themselves alpha males or wolf pack leaders or, you know, tigers in the savannah or real men or any of that stuff. When they start using this bravado, it belays a huge insecurity. And the reason you can say that is because if somebody makes a critique, their first thought is more bravado, more alpha male, sprinkle a little alpha on it, and that'll solve everything. All you're doing is looking like a giant insecure chode. You may not think it, because you just said, I'm alpha. I just said, I work out, I lift, and I read Evola. Of course I'm alpha. Everybody else just sees you spouting off at the mouth like a giant child. So for these negative inquiries and negative assertions, these are actually a better signal of aloofness. And aloofness is an alpha quality. This is what makes girls wet. This is what makes you look like the leader of men. It's all about the signaling. Social signaling, people don't understand how strong it is. If you don't believe me, ask why the cops didn't start cracking heads when people in Seattle just carved out a 6-square-block radius and screwed up a garden. Also ask me why a homeless guy managed to take it over. It's all about the signals. In this case, if somebody insults you, and not only, like, you don't agree with it, obviously. Most people don't agree with critiques on them if they're not right, if they're just a way to, like, flex on you. But not only do you not agree with it, but you're bothered so little about it because you have such a security in your own position, you have that mental point of origin, that you don't even feel the need to defend yourself. You don't feel the need to critique the other person back. You're a beta male. Why am I a beta male? You're the one who's wearing a pink t-shirt. Like, you see what I mean? You're flipping it back on them, and that's when you end up in that pissing match between two omega males over which one of you is more ridiculous. And the answer is, it's like, oh, this is probably going to kill the language fear filter, but it's like having a chess, it's like having a gold medal in the Special Olympics. Even if you win, you're still handicapped. I know it's a horrible thing to say, but you kind of get the point. You don't want to fight with a moron, because all that happens is you end up as the king of the morons, and you don't want that. So you just don't play the game. That's what fogging is. Oh, you're the worst. You're such a beta male. You're such a cuck. Yeah, I can see why you'd say that anyway. I mean, my wife is out right now with Jack Murphy's girl. You know what I mean? But that's just it. And then other people. And here's the thing. This is about the signaling. If some guy's trying to flex on you, of course you don't want a friendship. The kind of guy you want to hang out with doesn't feel the need to embolden himself by using your insecurities as a cudgel. You want to meet a guy who you see as a value proposition. So what you're doing is you're signaling to the crowd writ large. This guy is starting to flex on you. You're signaling to the crowd. Yeah, little man says little things. It's pretty funny, isn't it? And that's just it. And this is, again, this is how understand womanese but speak Manglish comes into play. This guy may still think you're a beta male. This guy may still think you're still a cuck. But you've just signaled to everybody else that, yeah, this stuff doesn't faze you. He's very secure and confident in himself. And if these other people are secure and confident in themselves, they'll see somebody, I'd like to hang out with that guy because I hate having to do status jockeys all day. I hate deal with that at work. I just want to deal with a guy who switched on. And if the other people are insecure, they're like, it's like a shot across their brow, a warning shot. All right, this is not the soft target that I can emote on. I'm going to pick that guy crying in the corner and screaming about alpha males. So this is just it. It's bigger than just getting laid. This is about self-actualization. This is about being a good man. This is about being socially aware enough of how to survive and thrive in social situations. But that's the point there. So back to the two super chats. I see Shoddy's $5 super chat, and we'll get back to the Bill Burr one. So Shoddy Ramadan says, do you do one-on-ones at all? I would love your opinion on some things. If not, keep up the great content. I do. For now, if you check my website, I have it there. It's ryanstone.com. You'll see it in the services or store. I can't remember what it's called. I'm closing those down like pretty soon. I'm not going to lie. I love them. I have a lot of good experiences with it. Guys usually come away with a lot more insight than they would. It's that personal connection. And if you're willing to pay for my time, more than happy to. But having said that, I'm busy as hell right now. And so something's got to give. And I find it's a much better use of my time right now to talk to like 100 guys or 89 guys right now live and deal with all of them than it is one-on-one. So get on it if you want to. Just be aware I'm probably shutting it down sooner rather than later. Plus, it always ends up a lot of work doubling. I don't like picking up the same rock twice. And while I can make a ton of value there telling the same sets of strategies to 10 different people on 10 different occasions. I would rather just say it once and then people can have it in perpetuity. So that's the thing there. The next one was the Bill Burr. Is he a beta purple pill, if anything? First off, he's not. As an authority, he's not. if I had to break it down, he talks a lot about like having a messed up childhood. I have a feeling his dad was really harsh on him. Mom was maybe a narcissist too. His mom probably used a lot of these manipulative techniques on him growing up, and so did his, and his dad used more physical, more overt techniques. So he probably built, again, from the parent actor or parent adult child model, built a lot of coping strategies involving deferring to his mom and vilifying his dad. She probably complained about dad. He preferred mom over dad because guys prefer women. That's the way it works. So he decided to make himself a promise keeper. And he says that a bunch, where I never want to be like my dad was. We're all improving slightly past that. And he has a wife right now, and he really likes her, and she really likes him. That's kind of what they're supposed to happen. And he's got a kid right now, and he really loves the kid. So why wouldn't he defer to them? Because they're nice people, and he wants to treat them nicely. And so I would argue, so obviously being nice to your family is not a bad thing, but the thing to be aware of is, from a blue pill perspective, if you're deferring to them too much like this at the expense of your own well-being, that's the same manipulation of we've been talking about through all these chapters. The only difference is they're not manipulating you, you're manipulating yourself. And so that selfish asshole mental model, that's, it's vital on this, because if something happens, maybe the girl goes feral, maybe she doesn't love him anymore. You don't want to end up, that's how Will Smith got into his position, basically. She's been such a good woman. I want to reward her by acting unattractive and not acting in the ways that attracted her to me in the first place. Now, it's not always going to happen. Sometimes these end up devolving into situations of dead bedrooms. Like, they'll call each other mom and pop. My grandparents did that. They always called each other mom and dad. They loved each other. They were the best friends ever. But from a sexual perspective, probably not ideal. So, while I don't want to just automatically dismiss him or praise him, just be aware there's lessons to take from this. If you stop looking at the identity, which pill is he, and you start looking at the behavior sets, do you think it's good that he's deferring to his wife? Do you think it's good that his wife is using these manipulative techniques to let him know what behavior is right and what behavior is wrong? And he's got hints of it. Like his whole helicopter stories, those let you know exactly what you need to know on this. Well, you know what? He wanted to fly a helicopter. She didn't like it. She thought it made him an irresponsible dad, but he's flying a helicopter. I think that's the kind of stuff you should be taking from it, more so than putting categories. Santa's nice and naughty list. So anyways, on that note, thank you guys for the chat. Thanks for sticking around. I will catch you on the next one. I think we're going to do that tomorrow, and I'll catch you there. Yeah, I gave myself a bowl cut and snuck into the Special Olympics and won. It was awesome. Marty, never change, brother. Never change. Anyways, have yourself a coffee. Hope you guys had fun. I really do appreciate this, by the way. Thanks for being very engaging in the chat. I read all these comments. I can't do it live, but once we're done with it, I always glance through. So stick with it, boys. I'll catch you on the next one.